What's up, my friends? It's Rick Mulready here. Listen, if you are feeling like you're struggling to keep up with all the AI opportunities, or maybe you're wondering how to even start leveraging AI in your business without all the headaches, the AIify newsletter is designed with you in mind, my friend. Every week, I simplify AI for you, showing you how to apply it and integrate it into your business so that you can work less and profit more. As one of my readers put it, it's a must-have for any entrepreneur who wants to get more done in less time. And they said there's a lot of noise out there and your information is up to date, yet just feels more calm and more relatable. So I want to invite you to sign up for the AIify newsletter. It's free. Just go to rickmulready.com/newsletter. That's rickmulready.com/newsletter. Hey, my friends, my name is Rick Mulready, and I'm an online business coach. I'm an ads expert, and I'm all about helping online course creators and coaches make more money in their business while working fewer hours. But most importantly, I'm a father and I'm a husband. With this podcast, you're going to learn exactly how to become what we here call the optimized CEO of your business. And that means you're optimizing your sales and marketing, your time, and your mindset so that you can have more freedom, a bigger impact, and make more money. So grab a coffee, open up your favorite notes app. This is the Art of Online Business podcast. Hey, my friends, Rick Mulready here. Now, before we get into the episode here today, I wanted to give you a heads up that we are accepting applications right now for my Accelerator Coaching Program. This program is for online course creators or online coaches, and you're a little bit more advanced in your business. You're already averaging at least 7 to 8K per month in your business, and you are looking to scale. You're looking to have a bigger impact. You're looking to increase profitability. You are looking to do all these things without all the hustle, right? And so that is exactly what we help you do inside of Accelerator. This is one-on-one coaching, group coaching, and a mastermind all wrapped up into one amazing, if I do say so myself, program. So if you want to learn more and apply, go to rickmulready.com/accelerator. If you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're feeling like I'm doing all the things, I need to build a team, I need to grow my team, I'm not sure what to do, all these things, then this program is for you. rickmulready.com/accelerator. Unique New York. Any Anchorman fans out there? I feel like I've had to do like vocal warm-ups to record here for you today, because if you heard the last couple of episodes here on the show, you've heard my voice being super scratchy because I lost my voice for a week out of nowhere. I just woke up one morning and I'm like, I have no voice. And just because it's so dry here in San Diego, I felt fine, but I had no voice. And you can hear it, a little scratchiness here today, but it's about 90% back. There's a lesson in and of itself, by the way. Look, it doesn't have to be A+ work all the time, right? Just get your work out there. As long as you are coming from a place of value and service, that's what's most important, right? You want to have an impact, get your work out there. And hey, that's what I was doing. So thanks for bearing with me. Psyched to be back with you here for another episode here on the show. This is episode number 526. And today we're going to be talking all about how to make high ticket sales without being salesy. And when I mean high ticket, I mean anything, say, north of $1,500, whether it's your online course, whether it is a coaching program, maybe it's a $5,000, $10,000, $50,000, whatever it is that you've got, an offer that is a high, quote unquote, high ticket, where you might need to get on the phone with somebody on Zoom. Does anybody get on the phone anymore? Get on Zoom or the DMs or whatever it might be, right? And joining me to share her sales expertise is Leah Niederthal, and she's a sales coach for women who run B2B consulting and coaching businesses. She's also an online business owner herself. She's the founder of Smart Gets Paid, and she has a corporate marketing background. She wanted to leave the corporate world to start her own online business so that she could travel the world, but she didn't really know how to sell. She wasn't comfortable selling, and so she taught herself everything she could about selling, and she overcame as she calls it, selling shyness and created a sales approach that feels comfortable, that builds strong client relationships, and just flat out gets results. And so I asked her to join me in the show here today because so many, especially many of my newer accelerator students, for example, who come into the program, have this feeling around selling, or this belief around selling, that it's like, oh, I'm being pushy. I don't want to be pushy. And so, you know, when it comes to selling their offer, their confidence goes down because that they have this belief of, in order for me to sell, I have to be pushy or I have to be salesy. And that's absolutely not the case. And I love sharing different ideas and viewpoints with you here on the show about, you know, a range of topics, obviously. And that's exactly why I invited Leah on the show today, to come share her expertise about overcoming that, you know, that belief of, oh, I have to be salesy, I have to be pushy in order to sell. And that's absolutely not the case. And we're going to break down her methodology here today. She read 65 books when it comes to selling. We talk all about that here today and what that did for her in helping her create her own methodology and system for selling. I really think you're going to like this conversation here today. Otherwise, I wouldn't be bringing it to you today, right? And so without further ado, with that said, let's go hang out with Leah Niederthal. Leah, welcome to the podcast. How you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for having me.
I feel like in the last like 10 minutes since we've been catching up before we hit record, like we just did an entire podcast episode in 10 minutes here.
We really did. We really did. Sorry, guys. We used up all the good stuff.
Yep. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you for listening. See you next episode. No, we're going to be talking about selling today. One of my favorite topics. You know, I often poll my students and ask them how they feel about selling. And 9 times out of 10, maybe not that many, but like a vast majority of people say they don't enjoy the process of selling, or they feel like they're being pushy. And so, and they're not confident in the sales process and all that stuff. And so, you're an expert in this stuff. And so that's why I wanted to have you on here to talk about your own experience, your own expertise. You're an online business owner yourself. So we're going to dive into all that. Before we dive into all that, let's have you introduce yourself, and a little bit about your background and what your expertise is.
Sure. Yeah. So I am a sales coach for women entrepreneurs. So I help women land more of the clients that they want, get more yeses, and get paid dramatically more for every contract. But I know intimately how uncomfortable selling can be, because I didn't come from a sales background. My background is actually in corporate marketing. And in 2010, I left that world to actually go on a trip around the world. It was going to be a backpacking trip around the world. And the first few weeks, we're traveling, you know, backpacking at one new town every 2 days. It was such a whirlwind. And so somewhere between Nicaragua and Panama, we decided that instead of trying to squeeze the entire world into 1 year and then go back and work for somebody else and spend the rest of our lives under fluorescent lights, what if we created a business and a life that would allow us to live anywhere? And that's how the first consulting business was started, a marketing and website design firm. So we ran that business on the road and then came back to the States to get clients so that we could then keep traveling and, you know, go see the places that we wanted to see and spend more time there. So as soon as we hit US soil, all of my like corporate conditioning came back. I was like, I need my 401k, I need my insurance, right? I need all these things. And even though my only job was to get clients that would allow us to travel, I just couldn't do it. I was so paralyzed, that salesy feeling, that pushy feeling. I couldn't do it. And I even actually went back and got a job working for somebody else, like a corporate job again, which I realized was a huge mistake, because I really wanted to run my own business. But if I was going to do that, I had to close this gap. I had to learn how to actually get clients. And I'd realized that what a lot of your listeners have probably realized too, is that marketing is not selling. Two very different skill sets. Yeah. And I had the marketing, but definitely didn't have the selling. So I decided to teach myself because I didn't want to see, I didn't want to learn how to sell or sell the way salespeople had sold to me in the past. And so I started reading everything I could get my hands on, which turned into 65 books. I started testing 65? Everything. 65. There's actually,
wait, you read 65 sales books?
Not sales books. Okay. Some books were selling, books were sales, but I also read books about online marketing, books about mindset, books about interpersonal relationships and psychology and social dynamics. Cool. And everything that I was learning, I actually started testing out in with my own clients, and anything that felt salesy, I just ditched. But anything that felt comfortable, I kept, and I wove together a selling methodology that really started working. And using that selling methodology, I have a 92% win rate and I've sold $3 million in work. And that's the methodology that I share with my clients because, you know, everybody struggles with this. No, there are very few people who think, yeah, I just love the sales part.
I'm one of those people. I love it just because like I know I'm so, and I know that we're going to talk about this, but like I'm so confident in what I offer. And I know it can help that person who is coming to me for help that I just love having that conversation. And I think you and I have similar backgrounds in a sense of like, I don't come from a sales background. I was in online advertising sales in the corporate world, but that was, I just sort of looked at that very different. And I know that we're going to talk about like, you know, quantitative selling and consultative selling based on somebody's needs. And that was kind of like what I taught myself in the real world, just very similar to what, into what you did. And so I'm like, if this is for you, great. If it's not, that's cool too. Like I'll refer you to somebody who I think is a better fit for you. But I think coming from that approach and that perspective has always helped me.
Yeah. And I think that you're a perfect example and me as well. Didn't come from this background. You actually can learn how to do this and feel comfortable with it. But I think that, you know, the thing that actually holds people back is not necessarily believing in their service or believing that they're good in what they do or believing that they can help somebody. It's all of the stuff that we bring with us into the sales part of our business. Things that you might have heard growing up about what, well, women specifically should and shouldn't do. You know, people telling you not to toot your own horn. All of the lessons you might have heard early in your career from well-meaning people who, you know, sort of told you something or encouraged you to do something that might have served you in the corporate world, but not as a business owner. And so part of the selling, learning how to sell, isn't simply just learning how to sell and feeling confident in what you do and what you can offer. It's unlearning a lot of the stuff that we bring with us that keeps us small, makes us feel uncomfortable, and holds us back.
Yeah, exactly. So what were some of the things that, what were some of the, because I know that you created a methodology based on everything that you were reading, everything that you were learning, everything that you were implementing, and figuring out what felt comfortable for you. What were some of the big takeaways that came out of all of that? Especially, I'm really curious, especially about, you read 65 books. And, you know, it's one of those things where what I love about what you said is like, we can read something in a book. We can read a book like how to ride a bike or something, but we're not really going to learn it until we actually go do it. So what were some of those things that you were like, oh, that's really interesting that you took from a book? And then when implemented it and you're like, oh no, that doesn't feel good or that didn't work as well as I thought it might.
You've probably heard the saying, if you want to make money, serve people. If you want to make a lot of money, serve lots of people. But how do you do that when you're already super short on hours in your day? So if you're on my email list already, then you know that I'm speaking at the Platform and Profit Summit. It's 100% free, and it's a 3-day virtual summit to help you better position yourself and your brand to create even more partnership and profits. Plus, in addition to discussing Facebook ads, I'll also be speaking on a panel called Positioning Yourself and Business for More Connections and Collaborations. Like, if you've ever wondered how I'm meeting all of these cool guests that are appearing on this podcast that you're just getting so much knowledge and info from, well, I'll be sharing that during that panel too. And it all starts May 1st. That's this Wednesday in a few days. Because, well, what if you could quit funding all of your events and projects and launches out of pocket and learn how to leverage the power of sponsorships? And I love this because I hate theory. I never did well with theory in school. I just like practical, actionable advice from people who are actually doing it right now, not what worked for them like 5 years ago. So like, what if you could generate consistent cash flow for your business or increase income while also reaching your lifestyle goals? You know, that reason that you started the business in the first place. Like, what if you could build credibility and influence while creating consistent partnerships and profit to grow your business? Me and about 30 other expert trainers, are going to share our strategies to help you create partnerships and profits, plus the mistakes that we've made so you can avoid them. And I can't stress this too much. This is what's working now, not last year, not the year before, but what we all are doing in our businesses now. So you ready to finally have more partnerships and profit in your online business? Use the link below to register for free. The Platform and Profit Virtual Summit, it's a 3-day free, 100% free summit, and it starts this Wednesday, May 1st. Learn how to better position yourself and create an even better partnerships so you can finally create the profits you desire in your business. I can't wait to see you there. Chat soon. All right, back to the episode.
Yeah. Do you want the ones that felt good and the ones that didn't feel good?
Yes, both.
Well, I'll tell you what didn't feel good. And you know, you had mentioned, you said you read 65 sales books, and I didn't. It was a fraction of the sales books. But I have to tell you that some of the things I learned in sales books were some of the least helpful things. Mm-hmm. Any type of sales technique that has a name, like the puppy dog close or something like that, I found super uncomfortable. When I thought about using it, it just made me feel gross. So that's one that I sort of could let go of.
Is that a real thing?
It is a real thing, the puppy dog close. It refers to this thing like, here, take this puppy dog home, and if you don't like it, bring it back.
Oh, yes. I've heard. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Yep.
So, and there are some giants in the sales industry that wrote books like that. And to be honest, some of that stuff just didn't feel right to me. Mm-hmm. So, but some of the stuff that felt really, really important and started really working in helping me build better relationships with my clients and helping them say yes, were things about social dynamics and psychology. So there was one really great, technique or, you know, exploration of how two people interact, and one person sort of seems to have all the power and one person doesn't. And when you can renegotiate that relationship, you can feel comfortable talking to anyone, whether they're, you know, junior associate or the CEO of a company. Mm-hmm. So that was something really important too, that I wove into the methodology that I share and signed, because a lot of the clients I work with just feel like their clients hold all the cards. Their clients have all the power. And so part of being able to feel confident is understanding that, no, you actually do. You can lead this process, and you can do it in a way that feels really respectful, builds a great relationship, and helps your clients actually say yes.
Are you doing a lot of that prior to, because a lot of my listeners are, and, you know, so like, so for me, for example, for my accelerator coaching program, it's application only. It's not like someone can go to a page and click a buy button and like, oh, okay, I'm in, because we're very selective on who we allow into the program. So there's an application process and we get on a call with them and we learn more about them, et cetera. How much, and a lot of people are, you know, a lot of my listeners are doing that as well from a, you know, I would say from on that higher ticket, quote unquote, level, maybe $1,500 and up, whether it's for a an online program or a coaching program or what have you. How much of this process that really works well for you and that you teach is done before there's even a phone call or a DM or whatever it might be? Do you know what I mean? Like, how much of it is it done like in the lead up process? Maybe in the marketing side?
I love this question because I think it's really easy to believe that the sales process starts with that DM or the application or the contact us form. But the sales process actually starts long before that with the types of messages that people are seeing from you in your marketing, in your business development, the things you're posting on LinkedIn, for example. It starts with how you describe your work in your actual business. If you're talking about things like, tactically versus if the way that you describe your work and your business is based around the value. It starts in, how you lead, how people essentially go through their own education process before they take that first step. When you can do all of that really well, it makes the rest of the sales process easier, shorter. Mm-hmm. But you have to sort of think about it holistically and really sort of help the client learn about you and decide that you're the best provider well before they reach out.
So let me take the flip side of that. Let's just say that somebody is doing a webinar and they run ads to get people to register. So this is cold traffic coming into the webinar. And let's just say it's a $2,000 offer and that the person selling the program has either said, hey, you can DM me on Instagram or Facebook message me or whatever it is to chat with me if you have questions, or maybe they've opened up their calendar. It's like, hey, let's jump on a 15-minute Zoom call or what have you. So what would you say to that person who hasn't necessarily, like it's cold traffic coming in, like somebody's registered because they saw their ad, they clicked on it, they registered, they don't really know much about this person, and maybe they attended the webinar or they didn't, but they're reading the emails and so forth. And they're like, oh, I'm interested, but I want to know more. So they don't have necessarily, the person selling it doesn't necessarily have the benefit, if you will, of that lead up relationship building. What would you say to that type of person in that scenario?
The provider, the coach, person exactly. Who's offering the program?
Yep.
Well, so I think that a really common misconception in the online marketing, online business space is that we sort of forget that there is a sales process. There is this buyer's journey. And, we all know it goes from awareness to familiarity, consideration, purchase, and loyalty. And I think that we've been lulled into this belief that somebody can go from awareness to purchase very quickly, when really that's not how most people buy. That's not really how anybody buys. Sometimes we can help them go through that process very fast. But, we really have to think about once they're learning about us and becoming more familiar with the problem that we solve, starting to consider that we might be the best provider to solve their problem, and then purchasing, that can take, much longer than the typical sort of webinar funnel allows.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why it's important, even if they don't say yes at that time, to really stay connected, stay in front, keep nurturing, because they might be in a part of, they just might need more time to go through that purchase process. But, if you're only thinking about it in terms of how do I get more people on my webinar and then how do I close them tomorrow, then you may just be operating in a way that doesn't really work with the actual buying process.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you bring that up, because that is something that many of the new people coming into my accelerator program, for example, and I say new because the people that have been there for a little while have heard me say it a million times, but a lot of the new people coming in, they get so down and depressed, if you will, about, hey, I just did this launch or whatever they might be doing, and my conversion rate, if you will, was pretty small. And my immediate first question is like, well, what kind of traffic was it? Was it cold? Like, were they meeting you for the first time and they spent maybe 60 minutes with you and you're asking for, you know, $2,000? Or was it somebody who has known you for a while? It changes the story. And then it's like, well, what are you doing after that to continue that conversation with them, to continue to build that relationship with them so that, you know, when that person's ready, to your point, Leah, like 6 months down the road, for example, they're ready to purchase.
Yeah. And I think the big thing I would say to somebody like that is it's not that you've done anything wrong. It's just that we've, you know, been sort of told that this is the way to do it when we really have to think about it from the client's perspective and their own buying process.
Yeah. And you mentioned like the social, I think you said social interaction, social dynamic from like the stuff that you're reading from a psychology standpoint. How can one take that into like these principles and your methodology into, say, like a sales call? Where they're hopping on Zoom with somebody and, you know, they're selling a whatever $10,000 offer, whatever it might be, that something that's not a, you know, $497 or something like that. What sort of tips would you give somebody to help them not only feel more comfortable, but try to shorten that sales process to get somebody to enroll?
Yeah. If you don't love the sales part of this process and you don't, you know, the first thing is often a mindset shift in that you can actually do this. You can actually offer this. You can actually sell and feel really comfortable doing it. You know, I'm living proof, right? I am a total introvert. I do not want to go shake 1,000 hands. I felt super uncomfortable selling and I learned how to do it. And I really comfortable and, you know, good at it. And my clients are doing this every day. And so the first thing is if you've said, you know, I'm just not a salesperson or I just don't like the sales part, it is possible to do this. And the first sale really has to be to yourself. The second thing I would say to people is that back to the social dynamics piece, that you deserve to take up space just like anybody else. Just because your client is the one on the other end of the phone or on Zoom, and they are the one who's going to make the decision based on, you know, am I going to move forward or not? They don't have any more power than you do. You are peers. This is what I tell everybody. And, you know, this is a big point in module 3 of my program. You are peers. And so if you can approach a sales conversation as a peer, then it allows you to feel a lot more comfortable. You can actually have a conversation instead of feeling like you have to read from a script, or you're about to mess something up, or you're about to do something salesy. And then the third thing I would just offer is that simply having a conversation, simply offering something is not salesy, is not pushy. Of course, we've all, you know, interacted with sort of that used car salesman type. But just because other people have done that in their selling doesn't mean that you are currently doing that in your selling. And if you are really approaching this from a place of service, if you see a problem and you are somebody who wants to solve it, it's really your responsibility to just offer. And making an offer alone isn't pushy.
So I want to break that down a little bit, a couple things that you just said. And I want to start with what you just mentioned there is like the act of making an offer of your program, course, whatever it might be. Like some people are going to think still, but wait, I'm still selling that person. So how would you recommend that we break that thought apart? So that it's more of, no, look, I'm making this offer to you from a place of service because I know that it can help you.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to how you message the offer. And, you know, when I think about taking sort of best practices from consultative selling into the online business and online marketing space, it's really this idea that clients don't actually care what you do. They don't care about the features of your program or what's included or, you know, what you are doing in the program. They care about how they are different. They only care about what you do in terms of how your clients will be different in the future. And so clearly this person who got on the phone with you wants some difference in their life or in their business, and you can help them get there. So if you can focus on, you know, how this person will be different and uncovering why that is, right? And what, in what ways they want or need to be different, then you can offer to help them get there. But you're not selling. What feels salesy sometimes is selling, it's got this many calls or has this many downloads or has this many whatever. If you can, you know, let that go and really focus on what this what your potential client needs and that you can help them get there, then it really keeps you in that service mindset.
What are some of those questions that one can ask to help determine exactly what you just said? Because I love that. It's like, look, we're having a conversation. This isn't, I'm not here to hard sell you, if you will. This is a conversation to learn as much as you can about that person. What are some of the questions that you recommend asking in order to get that information? And then what do you do? Like part B to this question is, what do you do when somebody, you're asking these questions and they're not, like they're answering in a way that, uh-oh, this is not a good fit for me, but I really want this money, for lack of better, like that's the reality of a lot of people's situation.
Right. So I think one question that I love to start with is what prompted your interest in this call, right? Or something to that effect, because really you should be in sort of listening mode. The client should be in talking mode. And a question like that really sets some context for where you can take the rest of the conversation. Another question, you know, and the, really the point of any sales conversation or discovery call is really to uncover, it's not to really figure out like, what do they want? It's to uncover why they want what they want. What is the real value that they are looking for? And so questions like, you know, what happens if nothing changes is a really good way to sort of uncover, two things. The first, what is the sort of undesirable reality that they are currently in that they want to get away from? And it also helps you know how motivated might they be to solve this problem. So if you say, what happens if nothing changes? And they say, I guess I'll just, you know, keep going. Then they might not be highly motivated to say yes to something. But if you ask that same question and they say, you know, I'm going to, you know, insert some sort of like dramatic outcome here, then you know that that's really good data for you. So then you know, all right, this person is really serious about solving a problem. And then to your question about what happens if the answers are just, the client's not going there with you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So in my program, we call these flags on the field. And if you're trying to establish value, if you're trying to really get to the bedrock of like, what is prompting them to make this change or take this action? And they're just like, I don't care, you know, how many calls, how many whatevers, right? That's actually great data. And so if you, they just might not be a good client for you. And that's the hard truth because, you know, we don't just want to land the client. We have to, we get to work with the client. And if you feel like, you know, the client isn't going to go there with you to either make the transformation or do the work or what have you, then they might not, you know, you might, of course, get the client, you may get the money, but some money is expensive and it might result in, you know, a working situation that you don't love.
Yes. Now you mentioned money there. What are your thoughts on when all somebody really wants to know is how much does this cost? Whatever this is. You know, if they're coming on to a call and they're interested in a program, but they're not, they don't know what the price is, and that's all they're focused on is like, just tell me the price. Like, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. You know, I mean, I think I kind of think about it in two ways. The first is that they may not be a great fit, right? If you can't if they really won't go there with you to just uncover some of the value of their, of what they're looking for, right? The value in their business and their life, then you can answer and you can sort of, you know, however you're tracking your potential conversations and or your consultations or whatever, you can sort of chalk them up to probably like, this is probably not going to close. Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you can approach it also with a little bit of compassion and just diving back into the purchase funnel, it may just be the case that this is a piece of data that this client needs in order to continue on the sales journey, right? Through the purchase process. So I kind of think about it like, it's not that it's a no, it just might be not right now, because people have to make their own buying decisions their own way. And some people sort of can't move forward if they don't have that information.
Yeah. And what happens a lot of time is the person who is, you know, who is the course creator or the coach who's making the offer is like, you know, I've seen this and I used to do this myself. Unfortunately, I'm just like, okay, like then you're not a fit. And that's, it's always going to be that way, you know, whereas, you know, as I've matured in the business over the years, like, all right, you're not a fit. No worries. Like maybe you will be at some point. I'm always here. We are always here. Or maybe, you know what? I think this person over here that I know might be a better fit for where you're at right now and what you're looking for.
Well, I think you can do that when you have reached a part, two things. You've reached a level of comfort with this process. Right. Yeah. So, you know, you have the wherewithal to say, we're not a fit, somebody else is better, et cetera. But also, I think it's very hard to do what you're describing when you're in a scarcity mindset. Because if this is, you know, the only conversation you've had this month, or you know, you're not going to, you know, hit your goals or your marketing isn't hitting, and so much is riding on this one conversation, that really does change how you approach it. You know, 100%. You might agree to something like maybe a discount that you wouldn't otherwise if you had a pipeline full of potential clients or consultation calls lined up. You might take it very personally. It might, you know, put you on the dark side, you know, like you might just feel really bummed that, you know, that thing that a lot of entrepreneurs do. Clearly, this is not working. Am I even cut out to do this? Should I create a new offer? Should I, you know, spin out and do 18 other things? Yeah. So I think that that's why the ability to have a great conversation, like a great sales conversation, is really dependent on so many other things, you know, that are not just about what do you say in the actual conversation, like your pipeline and your marketing.
Yeah. Along those lines, what are some things that we tend to do, we being like online course creators or coaches, that where we unknowingly keep them from saying yes, or like, yeah, I'm all over this. Where do I sign up? What are some things that we sort of do to kind of self-sabotage this process without even realizing that we're doing it?
Yeah. Well, one thing is really focusing on the tactics instead of the value. And I see this a lot where you haven't sort of painted a picture, like I was saying, about how will you be different? Because nobody wants the program. They want the results and the outcomes in their life that the program will help them bring, you know, that will bring about in their life. Another thing is that we actually accidentally make it hard for people to say yes. And I don't mean like hide the buy button. I mean, we aren't sort of offering the right information at the right time, or we aren't considering sort of how, you know, even what other things might go into the decision to purchase. 90% of selling actually happens when you're not there. And so how are we arming people to do what is necessary to say yes, whether that involves talking to a partner or a spouse, or whether that involves, you know, just sort of lining up other things in their life. So just remembering that the sale doesn't happen in isolation, and we have to really help people say yes. A great example of leading the client in this way is, let's say you have a nurture sequence and somebody writes back with a question, customer service question. Instead of simply writing back with the answer, write back with the answer and then also include, whenever you're ready, here's the link to you know, join this next class, right? Mm-hmm. Put it right there. If you, of course, the link probably exists in 15 other places, but yeah. We're going to put it right at their fingertips so that you can reduce all the barriers for people to take action. So leading the client is a really important one.
Yeah. And you mentioned something really important there too, that, you know, like I have to talk to my partner. I have to talk to my spouse. I'm not the only decision maker, whatever it might be. What are your thoughts on, you know, many people call that an objection. Not really. It's not really an objection, but it's like, I'm not ready to make this decision right now. I have to do this. How do you recommend handling those types of situations?
Yeah, I think in that case, it's sort of a mental shift in that so often we feel like we are selling to the client. Mm-hmm. And when somebody brings up a partner, spouse, some other decision maker, you know, for some, a lot of the women I work with, they're selling into teams and, you know, they have a CMO or somebody like that. So that's actually really good data. So instead of, if you can think about, instead of you are selling to the client, become an ally to the client, and you and the client, you're helping the client sell into somebody else. So when you think about it like that, it sort of opens up an opportunity to be helpful. So, you know, back to this, what I mentioned about leading the client. So saying things like, would it help if I shared some bullet points that you can bring to that conversation? Or what do you think would make this a slam dunk for this person? And sort of talking through it. You're essentially, you know, kind of like what I had said about 90% of selling happens when you're not there. You're essentially arming your client to sell on your behalf. And when you can think about it like that, it's less of an objection and it's just another part of the purchase process.
Now, when you say, you know, 98% of the selling happens when you're not there, are you referring to like the marketing and them consuming and they've already built that relationship with you through what you are doing in your business overall? What do you mean specifically by that?
Yeah, it includes all of the information that they take in about, you know, where they identify the problem and they start to learn about you and they decide that you're, you know, a great the provider that's going to help them solve this problem. Mm-hmm. To when you have a conversation and they have to, they talk to somebody else. They have to just think about it for a second. In some cases, if you're selling into a business, they have to talk to their team, talk to their VP, go to procurement, what have you. But it's just this idea that the part that we see is so small. The part that we see is they're on the phone or they're on Zoom and we're having a conversation. Maybe we're having more than one conversation, but whenever they are reading one of your sales emails, that's where some selling happens.
Yep.
Whenever they are, you know, they've thought about it and they're still considering it and they go back to your website just to make sure that you are who you say you are, that's when selling happens. And so that's why, yes, sales conversations are really important, but you have to remember that the sale is going on whether you see parts of it or not.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes total sense. And that's why we should spend a lot of what I think one of the best investments that somebody can make in their business is writing copy, your messaging, and being able to communicate everything that you're talking about here from the perspective of this is the value, this is the benefit, not like you're going to get X, Y, Z in this one. You know, when you join this program or this course, or what have you, it's, yeah, hopefully they're going back and reading this or watching whatever video or listening to whatever it might be. That is so, so important. And it's okay if somebody, and again, to like back to our, you know, previous part of the discussion a little bit earlier, as far as if somebody doesn't decide to join, take you up on the offer at that point, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a no forever. But yet, depending on where we're at in our business, it's easy. That's, you know, it can be easier to accept that, or, you know, other times not so easy to accept that. I want to start to wrap up here. But one question I have, and this might be this is definitely a should question. So I don't know if it's, I get wrapped up in shoulds a lot in like my own personal life. So I try to be very cognizant of on the business side as well. What do you think is a good close rate, if you will, on sales calls, or, you know, wherever there's a contact with the person selling that's beyond a sales page, beyond an order form, it's on a Zoom call, it's on a DM, or it's on whatever, where you're actually talking to the person, what's a good close percentage in your mind?
I hate, everyone's going to hate this answer, but it depends. It really does.
On
it
what?
Depends on several factors. It depends on the price of the offer. It depends on to what degree these people are warm before they come into the sort of selling event, right? Mm-hmm. Like a webinar. It depends on how you sell, right? Is it, are you doing like a two-part sales conversation, you know, method? Are you just doing it all over email? It depends on even how often you might even offer this program. So I hesitate to even say, you know, you could have a great business having a low number of leads, but closing at 50%, right?
Yeah.
Whereas you could also get thousands of people on a webinar and have an abysmal close rate. And, you know, that's not better just because you got thousands of leads. So
yeah.
I'm sorry. I know that is a crap answer, but there is no one number. It's really dependent on a lot of factors in your business.
Yeah. And I think I was curious about what your answer was there, but I also like, at what point does somebody look at their quote unquote, people saying no, and they're like, oh man, like, there's a lot of people saying no. At what point are we revisiting this or looking at recordings or whatever it might be to kind of like, you know what? I'm not closing a lot of people, if you will, for lack of, I don't love that word closing, but just, you know, in just for simplicity's sake, I'm not closing a lot of people. I should probably look at what's not working. I guess that's where I'm kind of going with this. And what do you recommend on that front? At what point should people be like, you know what? I should probably look at this to figure out what's really going on here.
Right. Well, I would say if the method that you conduct sales conversations and close people into a program is through actual conversations, I would say anything under 30%, 30, mm-hmm. you know, a third, is cause for some exploration. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you did the sales call wrong, but it does mean that you should look back into the different steps of the funnel to see, you know, everything from, are the right people seeing my message? Are the right people signing up? Look at the webinar, for example, look at the sales sequence. You know, you know better than anybody that it's a series of conversions, right? But if you're under 30% or, you know, maybe a third, then I would say it's time for some exploration there.
Two more questions, because you said something right there that made me think about it and kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. What is your thought on evergreen availability? And evergreen availability could mean like an evergreen webinar, could mean an evergreen challenge, whatever it might be, versus a live launch.
Oh my gosh. I don't
We could spend a whole episode on this, I realize.
I know. Well, so there is, you know, what's interesting is what I teach is consultative selling, but I also run an online business. And so there are things that we've implemented in the business that are purely sort of online marketing, including launches, right? Mm-hmm. And listen, I think that launches have a place. I've had a very launch-driven business to date. I think that the world is changing. And so my team and I are leaning more towards, I wouldn't say pure evergreen, but something that's not totally hinged on launches. Because what we found, for example, is that in my business, we've had the highest number of people attending a webinar, but our conversion rate is lower than it's been, because the women that we work with, our understanding, and based on, you know, some of the feedback that we've gotten, is that everyone is super overwhelmed, running on fumes. And if I tell you about a program on one day and expect you to make time for it because it starts 7 days later, I don't know that people have the ability to fit that into their lives on such short notice. And so I would be curious to see how this changes over the next 6-8 months, because I think the way people want to interact with courses and programs and coaches is different just based on where we are right now.
Yeah. And I really agree with that. And we were briefly talking about this before we hit record, and you know, for all of you guys listening right now, I'm going to be talking a whole lot more coming up here on the show about, I really don't think that live launching is a business model. And that's something that I've done for most of the years in business. But, you know, just piggybacking off of the point that Lee just brought up, look, I think that the behaviors of people have changed. They expect something different. You know, just two things that point out to me, like I was going to, and I'll share more about this at a different time. It's so early in the stage, but I'm helping my sister build a little bit of an online business for herself. And I went to buy a course from somebody who was recommended to me. And the course that I found, it wasn't open. It wasn't open until like October, November. And I was like, well, wait, I want this now, you know? And then I realized that it wasn't that, actually I needed the more beginner version, which was available, right? And then I also watch people's launches that are not my students. And I saw an email of somebody a couple of weeks ago, and in their final cart close day email, they said, now's your time, because if you don't take action now, you know, you won't be hearing from me for a while. And I was like, what? Like, are you like, really? Like, just because someone doesn't take action now, like this is, and I just feel like that is of the past, and a lot of people still do it and it works. But I think the behavior of people has changed, unless you're doing like cohorts, for example, you know, like, all right, we're starting on this date and like it is a close because we're starting on this date and I'm only working with whatever, 25 people. I think that's a different story. So doing live launches like that absolutely has their place. But I think just the model of like, okay, I'm only going to launch once a year or twice a year, that's changing. You're going to say something there.
No, I totally agree with you. I think that, you know, back to what we were saying, everything I do sort of goes back to the purchase funnel, right? The buyer's journey. And if you think about it, a launch doesn't map to the buyer's journey, you know, because we expect them to go through that very fast. And especially right now, you know, we forget that it's not just about selling courses or programs or what have you. People have to do the course and do the work if they're going to really get the benefit that is possible in their life and their business. So, and more than any, this is my belief, and more than any sort of marketing or funnel or whatever, the best advocates, the best salespeople for your programs are people who have done them, gotten through them, gotten incredible results, and tell their friends because they want to.
Totally.
Right. And so if we're focused only on the sale, but launching in a way that, you know, people don't have the time to fit them into their lives so they can actually do the work, then we're sort of focusing on the wrong things.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Completely agreed. I think that's a great place to wrap up. I do want to ask you one more question. Top three books of your 65. I mean, that was a long time ago. And so I know you've read more books since. Top three books that you recommend. And I had no idea, you didn't know I was going to ask you this. I'm totally putting you on the spot.
Totally. Okay. First book. Oh gosh, this is so hard. You can actually get these books at bit.ly.com/65 books. Okay. So you can pick any books you want. I'd say the first one is Snap Selling by Jill Conrath. She is a legend in the sales world, and Snap Selling is a really good sort of look at the mind of our clients and our customers. First one. Second is Mindset by Dr. Carol Dweck, yep. which is perennial favorite, really sort of help you understand that just because something is difficult doesn't mean it's impossible. And if you're open to this sort of growth mindset, then you can actually learn how to do and feel comfortable, you know, doing anything. And the third is, I would say, Value-Based Fees by Alan Weiss. It's really around sort of thinking through, it's geared towards consulting, but there's a lot in there about how to help people through a journey to say yes to something that's expensive.
I love it. Snap Selling, Mindset, value-based fees. Okay. Awesome. I'll link everything up for the books. I'll link up where to get your list of 65 books there on the show notes for today's episode. Where can people connect with you, learn more about you, Leah, the programs that you offer? What are all the best places?
Sure. So first place would be my podcast, where I'm letting people go really behind the scenes and listen in on actual coaching calls where I'm helping people through their biggest sales challenges. That's at the Smart Gets Paid podcast. And also on LinkedIn, that's my sort of social channel of choice. And a few times a week there, I'm sharing a strategy, a different way of thinking about something, a different way of approaching and getting comfortable with selling. So if we're not connected on LinkedIn, definitely head over there and connect with me. And then, of course, awesome. My website, smartgetspaid.com.
Smartgetspaid.com. Awesome. Right. I will link all the links up, guys, on the show notes for today's episode. Leah, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I super appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Hey, my friend, as always, thank you so much for tuning in today. Super appreciate you. If you've not already, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on whatever podcast platform that you are listening on, or follow it if you're on like Spotify, for example. That helps make sure that you do not miss any of the 2 episodes per week that I'm putting out. And I always super appreciate that support. So be well, my friend. Until next time, talk to you soon.
Don't forget to head down to the show notes below and register for the Platform and Profit Summit that starts May 1st, this Wednesday, where you're going to hear just practical advice that's working right now, this year in 2024, not in years past, right? Like how to build a 90-day evergreen funnel that actually works. Presented by Corinne Crabtree. Heard of her? How about minimalist marketing? How to get more eyes on your business by doing less? Or what about 5 simple website fixes to get more clients? I'm not going to read through all of these good talks and strategy sessions, but what you got to take away is this is not theory. It's what's working in people's business. These experts that are speaking, they're sharing the good stuff, behind the scenes stuff. And, you know, I'll be speaking there too on a panel about how to position yourself and your business for more connections and collaborations, because really it's partnering and collaborating with people that brings authority, that brings in steady revenue and profit into my business. So I want you guys to learn and take away strategies and tips and tricks and real systems that you can put to work in your business right now. That link is in the show notes below. Sign up is 100% free, but it does start May 1st. That's in a couple days from now, and I'll see you there. Take care. Bye.